Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Lost Skills Podcast. We help you learn the skills you need to survive modern life. Today's episode is going to be skills that every man should know. And I came up with this idea because of... it was actually suggested to me by Matt French. And if you haven't watched his YouTube channel, go check it out. Matt French. Look up Matt French on YouTube. You'll know it when you see his videos. Anyway, he said, why don't you do a podcast on how to be a man? And I thought, well, how to be a man. And he was getting at, for all the millennials out there, how to be a man. And, you know, I thought, fuck, that's kind of harsh. Oh, sorry, I swore. Oopsies. Oh, well. I guess someone will have to explain that to their children. But that was the thought that went through my head. It was like, man, it's kind of harsh. And I'm like, if I do an episode like that, yeah, maybe it'll go, you know, good. Maybe it'll get shared around. And I may approach that in a different way. But I think I'm going to approach it in the way right now is that skills that a man should know. Things that basically every man should know. There's a problem with that now in our country that just people don't have the skill sets they need to get things done. I know exactly what the problem is. I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is for the last 20, 25 years, teachers in schools have been drumming about how learn how to use computers. Screw that other stuff. You don't need to know that. You need to learn how to use computers because computers will do everything. Well, it's 20 years later. That didn't do me a very good service. And at some point, they will be correct. I believe they will. But there will be places for artisans and craftsmen to still do things. There are just some things a computer can't do. Yeah, you can buy an X-Carve and have it carve this beautifully intricate design into a piece of wood, and then you can have it do it again 500 times. But now if a man does that, the design may be similar, but everyone will be different in some way. Some part will be deeper here or shallower there, or it will be different. And that's the part that they don't understand is, yeah, sure, you know, cheap mass-produced shit is, you know, the way the world is going. But like I said, there's still room for the craftsmen, people that need to know things. I'll tell you what a computer cannot do for you. A computer can't change your damn flat tire when you're stuck on the side of the road. They don't have that yet. It's going to be a while, so guys, might as well get used to doing crap like that. And I don't know, you know, it's bothered me for years. It bothered me when I was a kid to the point where I did the opposite. I said, screw computers, I don't need computers. And I'm fairly good with computers now. But for a while there, I really didn't use a computer for too much. So, yeah, I think that, you know, they did us a disservice. They did, not only did they do someone like me a disservice, not so much as the kids now, but they did them a disservice and they don't think they need anything besides how to run computers. When I was in high school, which was in the mid-90s. They had shop class and computer labs. Well, they were starting to... They chanted this for so long that kids weren't signing up for shop class then. And then they opened a computer lab with these shitty-ass computers that really couldn't do anything at the time. You could do some homework on the computer. You could do a few things. But, I mean, it wasn't something that needed to have an hour devoted to doing it. It didn't have to have, you know, they could have set up a room with computers and, you know, instead of study hall, you had computer lab to do homework and stuff. They could have did that. So they kept convincing all these kids to start using computers and show them how to use web browsers and stuff. And the shop classes dropped off. When I went to welding school in 1998, boy, dating myself a little bit. Actually, I take that back. It was 97. That was the year I graduated. 97. In the spring, I graduated. In the fall, I went to welding school. And when I went to welding school, there was only 8 of us. It was 8 or 10 of us that took the welding program. Which, we at that time, we were one of the smaller classes they had go through there in a while. And even the teacher made the comment that, boy, there are not as many people signing up as there used to be. Well, years of indoctrination of telling them that computers are going to rule the world and you don't need to be a welder or an auto mechanic or whatever. Those jobs will go to the wayside. We'll have computers doing that. That's basic. I remember them saying that, oh, we'll have robots welding and, you know, cars will be able to tell you what's wrong with them, so they'll just basically fix themselves. I think we were supposed to have flying cars by now too. But I could see this podcast is going to go longer than I originally planned. So this will probably be a couple parts, and I did post the question to the Survival Punks group. You know, what skills do you think that a man should have? And I got a couple recommendations before I even started the episode. But I figured it would always be a part two, so. I just want to give you guys some background and on the way I think about this. And while it's true, robots can weld, there are no problems with my job drying up anytime soon. They actually say right now that they're in a shortage for welders. In the next probably 10 to 15 years, the wages for welders will increase significantly. Welders already make a fairly good wage. I make over $20 an hour at the job I'm at now, and I'm you could be considered a level 2. There's level 1, 2, 3, and 4. Probably where I will want to max out is a 3. I'm not interested in doing this 4 stuff, but a welder 3 gets paid $26.18 an hour right now. And basically I have most of the requirements filled for that welder 3 job. It's just when they post it, then I can sign for it. So if they're paying that now, in 10 to 15 years, the wages will go up, are going to go up significantly, because there's not going to be very many 40-year-olds to take my place. I will be just at the end, you know, towards the end of my working career, I will be probably making really good money. And honestly, for the area I live in right now, what I make is really good money. I work at the highest paid weld shop in the area, which is really nice. Anyway, the problem is everybody telling kids you don't need to work with your hands. We'll just boil it down to that. You don't need to work with your hands. But, you know, guys, as much as I hate to say that everybody thinks their kid is a special little flower, and they're unique, they are unique. Some kids are smart, some kids aren't so smart. Some kids are going to be computer programmers, some kids are going to dig ditches. That's the way the world works. And if someone can't come to grips with that because they think they should be a computer programmer, as their parents always told them so, you know, that's bullshit. That's that parent doing that child a disservice. That parent should have tried to steer that kid towards something suitable. I mean, you can't tell someone what to do, but, you know, you can point them in the right direction, and if they don't go there, then it's not your fault. But when you tell the kid, you're the smartest little kid on the planet, you're the smartest kid all the way through school, and then when they can't get into college, heaven forbid, they get into college and they spend a whole shitload of money and then they fail out, you've kind of failed as a parent. And, I don't know. It's something that bothers me. My wife is big on that. When our kid goes to college, I said, you don't even know. She's 8. In 10 years, you don't even know what's going to constitute some jobs. She could have a job. Her job could be making videos for YouTube or whatever the next best thing is on the computer. She could start her own podcast about something she likes. She could be a welder. I would not discourage that. In fact, I'll probably teach her how so she has some god darn skill to fall back on. You know, I mean, I'll probably teach her some skills because she's going to need something. Anyway, now that my rant is kind of over, let's get started. I have a list, which I cannot see because the phone is too dark. Oh, I see I have a few more recommendations. Sorry, guys. I gotta unlock my phone and wait for this slow piece of crap. Of course it did. Sorry, guys. Having technical difficulties. Apparently, I have a widget on my phone which just starts Evernote recording me instead of, you know, opening up all my notes that are on there. Let's see. Oh, there it is. I found it. If you don't have Evernote for your phone, it's a nifty little app. Oh, my God. It's a nifty little app if you're smart enough to put the thing under show ideas or show outlines. Okay, since we're going to have this is going to be a short part. It's definitely going to be a two-parter. Okay, first thing, I mentioned this in the beginning already, how to change a tire safely. In fact, I should have wrote how to change a tire at all. There are people that cannot change car tires, that don't know how, don't even know they have spare tires in the trunk, or that there's a jack or tools to take the tire off. It's one of the things that, as a man, you should know. I think that it's a skill that you need to know, because, let's face it, the more miles you drive, eventually you're going to get a flat tire, whether it be from the tire wearing out, whether it be from running over a railroad spike, which I know someone that happened to. He ran over a railroad spike on the road, or a piece of angle iron like my wife did one time in Green Bay, and I had to run down there and put a tire on for her. In fact, no, that wasn't the problem. she knows how to change her own tire. The problem was is that we had just got the vehicle and the spare was flat because it was all corroded. The rim was all corroded and it leaked all the air out of the tire. So I had to go get a tire put on. But anyway, you know how to block up the vehicle, where to jack on the vehicle, you know how to remove the lug nuts. And don't laugh, guys, because there's people that don't know the saying, righty tighty, lefty loosey. I mean, it's one of the easiest things to know. I think that if you drive a vehicle, this is the one thing. If you don't know hardly anything about a vehicle, this is one of the things you need to know. It's how to change a tire. Even for the ladies, I know that maybe not a lot of ladies will listen to this podcast because it's skills that every man should know. But ladies should know how to change a car tire. Because if you're coming home at 12 o'clock at night and you blow a car tire out in the middle of nowhere and you have to walk home, that's how people disappear. Just saying is that, you know, that's when bad things happen to people. May never happen to you, but that's how bad things do happen to people. So yeah, how to change a tire. Oh, one other thing is if you have a spare tire, every time you get your oil changed, and they don't do this at the oil changing place, people. So, you know, hit the rumble strip a little. Open up your trunk or, you know, crawl under your truck or wherever your spare tire is located, which is what you should know. And just check the air pressure on your spare tire. Because if you don't, more than likely, the time you need that spare tire, it will be flat as a pancake. Another thing that wouldn't be a bad idea to throw in that compartment in your trunk while you're in there is a big old can of Fix-A-Flat. You know, throw that in there. If the spare is flat, you could probably put that can of Fix-A-Flat in there and get it good enough to get somewhere, just so that you can get home or get to safety anyway. You know, be familiar with your lug wrench. Know how to pry any caps off of your rims or anything without damaging the rims so that you can get at the lug nuts, you know. When you're in that situation, you just put it on, tighten everything as tight as you can, and go home. And if you're worried about it, go 5 or 6 miles, stop, and check the lug nuts again. That's, you know, but I can't tell you in a case-by-case basis where to jack your vehicle up because I don't know what kind of vehicle you have. But a lot of times there's a spot, if it's a unibody car, which doesn't have a frame, there's a spot underneath the rocker panel you can jack up on where the frame is, the boxed-in, it's part of the car. And if it's an old pickup truck, or something with a full frame, anywhere on the frame usually is a good spot. But there are designated jacking points on vehicles if you look for them. That's something you should know ahead of time, before this happens. You should know that these places exist. And that's all I'm going to really say about that. You know, I thought about just running through this list and listing them all off, but I kind of want to talk about them a little bit. The next one is how to troubleshoot a problem, which this may go a little bit long. I think that that's a skill that every man needs to know. Actually, everyone needs to know, man, woman, child, how to troubleshoot a problem. I'm going to use an engine as an example. We're going to use, well, let's use a lawnmower engine, something nice, basic, and simple. My lawnmower engine does not run. So there's three things an engine needs to run. Air as in air compression, you know, that part. It needs fire, which is spark, and it needs fuel. So Those are the main things that a small engine needs to run. First thing you do, check the gas tank. Yeah, okay, it's got fuel. The second thing you do, going back through why my engine won't run, check the spark plug. Okay, I have spark. Now if you have spark, you've eliminated that for sure. If the spark plug's sparking, you have spark. Fuel could still be the carburetor, which if the spark plug's wet, there is fuel. If you pull it over a bunch of times, you pull this, take the spark plug out, check for spark, and the spark plug's all wet, there's fuel and spark. Then the next thing would be compression. Air compression. Combustion. So then that means either a ring's broken or you have a hole in the piston, you have a burnt out head gasket, but usually they run a little bit. Not all the time. So there's how to go back through a problem. You start at, here's the problem. My brake squeaks. Which brake squeaks? You know, when I press the brake pedal, I hear a brake squeaking. Okay, which brake? It's my front driver's side brake. Let's take the tire off. Another reason why you need to know about the tire. Okay, got tire off. I look. Well, the brake pads are worn down. Okay, are they worn down on the other side too? Is this normal wear? Okay, the other side looks like they're brand new. This side's wore off. Okay, now my caliper's sticking. So my brake caliper's sticking. I need to replace the brake caliper. You need to learn how to work backwards through a problem. It's a very, very valuable skill. In fact, I dare say that it's one of the most valuable skills that a person can know. Because otherwise, you have no idea. You have no clue. You know, that doesn't just pertain to cars. It can pertain to anything in life. You know, why didn't this happen? Okay, let's look to see what was supposed to make that happen and if something's wrong with one of those things. Okay, that works. Well, what was supposed to make that happen? And you keep going backwards until you find the cause of the problem. It's troubleshooting. It's, you know, knowing how to figure out a problem. Figuring isn't just for math problems. I guess that wasn't going to take as long as I thought. I think those are two pretty good examples. If it's not a good example, you know, email me or, you know, message me on Facebook even and just say, oh, that was horrible. That was a horrible example. You know, I just tried to pick a quick and easy example, something I understand easily to go back and tell you how to solve the problem. But for me, that explains troubleshooting to me. The next skill that you need to know, and it sounds very Trump-esque when you say it, is how to broker a deal. Now, not only do you need to know how to broker a deal, you need to know how to do it from both sides. Whether or not you are trying to buy something from someone to make a deal, or you're trying to sell something. When you're trying to sell something, you need to know that, you know, you're going to start high. Because someone's going to come along and try to talk you down. That's just the way making a deal works. If I sell a car, I usually put it up for $300 to $500 more than I want, which gives me some wiggle room. If I get more than I want, it's good for me. If I get what I want, I'm still happy. And that way, you know, when the person's trying to make the deal with you, you say, look, okay, take $200 off. And they're like, can you do better than that? Okay, I'll take another $200 off. And then you sell them the car, and they're happy because, well, hell, they talked you down $400. You know, that's part of brokering the deal. When if you can make it so both parties walk away happy, that's the best deal. Now, if you're someone buying, you go into this knowing that the guy wants more than he actually wants. You know, it's, you know, more than he actually, or less than he actually says, if he's smart about how to make a deal. You know, if he wants $500 or something, he's going to start at $800 most of the time. It's your job as a buyer to figure out if that's true. How about, $600 or $500? Sometimes the person will take it, or you tell them $400. You start low and you work your way up until you meet in the middle. That's the way a deal works. And that was just a really poor example, I realized. Anyway, you're going to start lower, as low as you can, say $400. This guy really wants $500. You know, you're thinking, well, maybe he wants $600. You start at $400, and you guys work back and forth until you kind of meet in the middle. And, that's the nature of buying things from people. But that's a very important skill in life. I know people personally who never try to negotiate with anybody. If they see something for sale for $1,500, they go there with $1,500 and they just buy it, which is good for the buyer, but not so good for them. I know people that, that don't try to negotiate for anything. They just buy stuff when you can talk them. If there's something that's sitting around someone's shop for a long time, you're like, guy wants $200 for it. I bet you just get it gone and sell it for $150 or something, Or if there's a snowmobile or a dirt bike sitting around, a guy wants $1,500, but it's been sitting there for like a year, and it's been sitting there because you've been watching it, and you offered a guy, $500 less, he might take it just to get it out of his lot, but at least you know where to start, how to make the deal. So that's a very important skill to know to get you through life. But I think, guys, I'm going to end the show right here. I'll pick this up in a part two, which, maybe I'll record it tonight when I leave work. Maybe I can get this one up and then next one. And I'm going to try to do more podcasts. Life is starting to calm down a little bit, but the problem I'm having is I'm not running out of ideas. It's just, I guess I equate it to writer's block. It's just, I haven't been able to come up with ideas that make me happy, that I want a podcast about. So I'll tell you what, guys, if you want to hear more podcasts, send me some ideas. Send me some ideas of some things I could do some podcast topics on. I'll take a look at them, and I'll see what I can make. So that's the deal. Send me some topics. You can email me, lostskillspodcast@gmail.com, or you can message me at Facebook. You could go and friend me on Facebook. My name's Jeff Radke. Everybody knows that. Or you can just go to Lost Skills Podcast on Facebook, and you can message me through there. So with that being said, I'm going to end today's show, and I hope you guys enjoyed it, even my rant. So I will talk to you guys later. Goodbye.